Hi everyone, welcome to Better Together, an As We podcast. For future reference, As We, as in A-S-W-E, stands for the Alzheimer's Society of Windsor and Essex County. This podcast will feature engaging conversations with guests ranging from community leaders to care partners and persons living with dementia to raise awareness about this disease. You're listening to Better Together, an As We podcast, and this is episode 31. My name is Cindy, and I'm joined today by Bill Bennett. Bill Bennett is a care partner to his wife, Sharon. Thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you, Cindy.
This is amazing. I've been trying to get you on the podcast for about a couple months now, I would say.
And longer than that.
Longer, right? But yes. It seems like time's flying by now.
Yes. We're gone all summer long, so things have to get done in the fall and winter.
At what point in your life did you feel like time was just slipping by?
After I got my driver's license.
So what was that like?
When I was 16 years old.
Wow. I honestly feel like since the last 2 years, it's been just flying by. Monday, and then it's already Sunday, and I got to get ready for the work week again. So
until you can get your driver's license, things go really slow. And once you get your driver's license, you're moving at the speed of vehicles.
Why do you think that is?
You can just do so much in so little time when you can travel and move around.
And it's because you have to do everything on your own after that, right?
Pretty much.
Life moves fast, eh, Bill?
Yes, it does.
So I just want to get the audience to know a little bit more about you. I did mention that you are a care partner to your wife, Sharon, but I want to know a little bit more about Bill. Who is Bill as a whole?
Yes, and you gave me the questions, and I scripted my answers so that
and that's totally fine.
as a professional engineer, that comes part and parcel with the territory. I'm 69 years old. I was born and raised in London, Ontario, and I'm a retired professional engineer. I have the benefit been blessed basically with a wonderful family. I have my parents all my entire life. They were together. My dad gave me a tremendous work ethic. My mother was a really loving, caring mother. I always knew I was well-loved no matter what I did. I was always knew I had a place to go, and she loved me. Mm-hmm. I quit high school. Wow. I only had grade 10.
Wow.
Got a job. Actually, it was a good job. High paying, quite well. I was living large for a few years.
Where did you work?
I worked in a union. And the union money was very good. And I had money for motorcycles and snowmobiles and cars and everything else that comes with it. Mm-hmm. But after a while, I realized that there was more to life than just things you can put gasoline in.
Yeah.
And I undertook upgrading studies to get into Fanshawe College. I went through a 3-year program there in civil engineering technology. Mm-hmm. Graduated from Fanshawe, worked in civil engineering in Saskatchewan. Then went back to school and got my degree in engineering. Mm-hmm. And then I went back and I worked 5 years as a structural engineer and municipal engineer, highly technical areas. And after 5 years, I made the move into leadership management of consulting engineering companies. Mm-hmm. And I spent the last part of my basically 35 years running engineering companies, getting the work, doing the work, getting paid for the work, and project management along the way. And I retired several years ago.
What an amazing resume. And you did all of that when you quit high school at grade 10, you said?
Yes.
Did you have to finish high school before going into Fanshawe? How did that work?
I upgraded myself by taking courses at night school and working at the same time. So I did math, physics, chemistry, English, mm-hmm. everything that was required to get into Fanshawe College through night school or on my own. And writing the tests.
What made you get into engineering?
Well, there's three things for success factors. You need a role model or role models. You need a plan, and you need a mentor. Mm-hmm. I had met some people who were in the construction engineering industry.
Yep.
I looked up to them. I wanted to be just like them. And to be just like them, I had to go get a degree and a diploma.
And you had all of the support from your family, your work, or was it?
Well, no, I quit work, so that was a big deal. To quit work and have no money.
Yeah.
Now I'd save my money, but I quit work because school, it was full time.
Did they have OSAP?
They did, but I worked and saved my money, paid my own way.
Mm-hmm.
My mother's only rule was if you if you quit school and work, you have to, and you want to live at home, you got to pay rent. If you want to go to school, you can live at home, room and board free. So I quit school and lived at home.
Good.
Or pardon me, I quit work and lived at home.
Were you, I don't know if you mentioned this, but were you the only child or you had siblings?
No, I have two sisters, two older sisters.
Oh, you were the youngest.
I was the youngest and sort of an afterthought, so I was spoiled.
Wow. So how, your older sisters, how much older are they than you?
Quite significant. My sister, my oldest sister's probably 10 years older than me, and my other sister's about 5 years older than me.
Did you, were you close to them, or you were just...
No, there was a lot of sibling rivalry, and I was seen as the spoiled young boy.
Your parents have kids every 5 years then?
Sort of, yeah.
Right? Yeah. And are they still living in London, or...?
No, my parents died a long time ago.
No, your sisters.
Oh, my sisters. One of them is living in Victoria, the other lives in Ontario.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. I didn't know you were from London.
Yes.
That's amazing. What made you move down to Windsor then?
Well, after during London and during college, I took my first job in Regina, Saskatchewan, mm-hmm. with a consulting engineering company out there. Not necessarily because I wanted to go out west, but because of the engineering company was very good, very progressive. And I always went back and worked for them. And then I ended up moving to Alberta, mm-hmm. southern Alberta and Calgary. And then I had an opportunity to come back to Ontario. My mother was still living. She had health issues. Mm-hmm. My wife, Sharon, was from Ontario. There was a lot of reasons to come back at that time, and I had an option to pick which city we wanted to live in, and because the company I was with had plans to move into the United States, Windsor made a lot of sense because we're so close to Detroit and the United States.
So did the company run out of Detroit or from Windsor?
It was actually ran out of Toronto, but they had offices throughout North America.
Oh, and then you like the fact that, Windsor was a border city?
Yes.
Nice. Okay, and Sharon, your wife, is she from London or?
She's from a small community north of London, Dashwood, you know, population 400.
It's called Dashwood?
Yes.
Is it?
Dashwood's still thriving, okay. But it's more of, it had a bit of an industrial base and agricultural, but, you know, it's turned into a sort of a small borough of maybe Exeter and.
Okay, I know Exeter.
Grand Bend area.
Oh, Grand Bend area. Okay, yeah. Perfect.
So I think it's 8 miles from Grand Bend.
And she still has family there?
Yes.
Okay. And yep. Do you guys visit often or?
Well, we do, but, you know, as we're getting older and, you know, we're into the next generation of a family and they've moved out to other places, whether it's Toronto or Guelph or.
You know what? I had an epiphany the other day and I was thinking about it. When you have a family, you don't think about all of the moving parts of having a family. Like, you raise them. And then they have their own family, their kids have their own family, and eventually everybody just finds their own, is it like piece of family is what I'm trying to say? I don't know how to explain it, but like everyone goes off into their own.
Yes, they go off in their own direction.
Yeah.
And we talked about time at the very beginning.
Yeah.
Time speeds up and they move and move around with careers and family mm-hmm. and other interests. And yes, we're a global nation now, not just a... living in a small agricultural community.
Yeah, it's wild to think about because you really don't think about that stuff when you raise a family, right? You think you raise them, they're going to stay near you and raise their kids near you. But obviously there's lots of factors and...
Careers pretty much control. And being in civil engineering, you had to go where the projects were.
Yeah, wow. And then you moved back to Ontario. Did you guys have any kids yet?
Oh yeah, we had three children. One was born in Saskatchewan, two were born in Alberta.
Okay.
And when they came back here, we moved to the Kingsville area, mm-hmm. and they went into public school and high school. And since then, we have two boys and a girl, and they've done very well for themselves. And
you had two boys and a girl.
Yeah.
So the opposite of what your parents had.
Yeah.
Wow.
And Sharon and I did a good job. They're a really good family. We have a very strong family unit. We're mm-hmm. again very fortunate and blessed in that area.
Do they live in Ontario as well?
Two live close by, and one is in Edmonton, Alberta.
Edmonton. Okay, wow. And grandchildren?
Six granddaughters.
Yes, we remember this.
Yes.
You take them, or they go shopping with Sharon, and you pay for it.
Yes, correct.
I still remember that.
Yeah. It's like Christmas time. My present is I get the bill. My visa bill.
So all your kids had daughters.
Yes.
And do you think they're are they done having kids?
Yes, I think.
Yeah. So six granddaughters. That's amazing.
Yes.
I would love to see you with all of your six granddaughters.
And they're all characters.
Do you have a time of the year where you guys are all together at the same time?
We're very fortunate as a family unit. We do get together, and my daughter is it's very important to her. She celebrates special occasions, birthdays, anniversaries, graduation for the kids, if they receive awards at school. And she hosts everybody at her place or at our place. So we're very fortunate to stay together. Our children are each other's best friends also. So that's, we're very fortunate in that area.
Yeah, you raised them well.
Well, we'll take some credit for that.
No, you did. Yeah. How did you and Sharon meet?
So Sharon came from the small community to attend Fanshawe College in a trade. And she lived with her sister two doors down. And I noticed her, and she noticed me, and we started dating. We dated for 5 years. She was with me while I was upgrading to get into college. Mm-hmm. And we got married in the last year of college. And we've been married for 45 years.
45 years. Wow. 45. How old were you guys when you met?
Oh, I think time was moving really fast then. I'm going to guess 19 or 20.
Wow. And it's 19, 20, and then you guys met, dated for 5 years, and then got married after that.
I think I was married when I was about 24.
And what did Sharon do for work?
She was a hairdresser up until the point in time that hairdressing requires working Fridays and Saturdays, and that's when Bill went to play. So the hairdressing didn't last very long because she wasn't available to join me.
Was it hairdressing back then that you only worked like Monday to Thursday, really? And then the Friday, Saturday?
Well, the special occasions were weddings or special occasions happening on a Friday or a Saturday. So hairdressing required work Friday and Saturday.
And sometimes Sunday.
Whatever the occasions were that people had to go to.
Oh, wow. And then so it slowly faded out.
That didn't fit well with my schedule.
Yeah. Well, and then she just
She transferred with me when we moved around. Nice. And worked at the Royal Bank for 33 years.
Nice. Wow. That's my bank. Yeah. And then Sharon ended up retiring from...
From the Royal Bank.
Royal Bank.
She's got Royal Bank blue blood.
You guys don't live in Kingsville right now, do you?
Yes.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, we've been there for almost 25 years now.
Oh, okay. For some reason, I thought it was somewhere else in the county that you guys lived. When did Sharon get her diagnosis? Or when did you start seeing signs?
Yeah, so I've sort of documented that. Sharon's mother had dementia. Mm-hmm. Anecdotally, we would hear stories at family events about her side of the family, and they used terms then which we don't use today, but they used terms like senile.
Yeah.
They get old, they get crazy.
Yeah.
We heard some stories like that from Sharon's mother's side. Mm-hmm. So we believe there was a pattern on her mother's side already of dementia, only using terms that we don't use today, and they didn't know anything about, you know, Alzheimer. Yeah. Or the effect. It was just you got senile, old, and crazy. So her mother had dementia. Sharon's two sisters have dementia. Mm-hmm. And her brother, and they all succumb to the disease of dementia. So
four siblings?
Yes.
Four kids? Okay.
Yes. Sharon had another sister which died prematurely, well, you know, when she's in her 30s, so we don't know her situation. Mm-hmm. So there was always the suspicion that if your family history on one side, your mother, two sisters, and brother had it, mm-hmm. there was a probability, a higher risk that Sharon would have it. And indeed, that was the case. And we noticed it many, many years ago. I first probably diarized it about 2014,
wow.
that I could really suspect something was going on. But even before that, so dementia doesn't just start. It starts a long time before. Mm-hmm. It takes a long time before we recognize it, as you know.
Yeah.
And it progresses at different rates. So when Sharon's two sisters passed away, her mother and her brother, and we went as long as we really could, you know, for Sharon before we thought there might be some health and safety issues for her. And, you know, people were starting to notice something different. We were very fortunate to have a good family doctor in Kingsville. And so he helped work. We worked with him. He got us into the memory clinic, mm-hmm. at the family health unit in Leamington. A wonderful group of people, a wonderful process. Dr. Sheila Horn runs that. And so to have a general practitioner who has all that experience with dementia, she worked with a group to diagnose Sharon. So our family doctor recognized it. We recognized it. She was diagnosed through the memory clinic, including Alzheimer's Society, mm-hmm. the social workers, pharmacists, registered nurses. Then we were fortunate enough to get a local neurologist, Dr. Winger. He had a diagnosis for it. From there, Dr. Winger talked to the London Health Sciences and recognized the possibility of the hereditary, the family history. We were of interest to them. Mm-hmm. They contacted me. We went through several discussions because they're very cautious in what they do. They recognized Sharon was a candidate to be genetically tested. She provided a sample. They genetically tested her, and it came back positive for the GRN-FTD, which is the frontotemporal dementia. Mm-hmm. And some other things that come along with it, when you read their report and what it affects, it might have been a little easier if they said what it doesn't affect, because they basically say it's everything.
Everything,
yeah. Yeah, it affects everything. So that diagnosis came in. So we've had it confirmed, from family history, from our own family experience, general practitioner, memory clinic, neurologist, and the London Health Science Center.
Before you went about receiving a diagnosis, you and your family members noticed changes in her behavior and personality. Did she notice it herself?
Well, Sharon lived through her mother's disease, mm-hmm. her sister's disease, and her brother's disease. So she lived through that from the very beginning to the very end. So she was well aware that she may be a candidate mm-hmm. to have inherited whatever her family history had given her. Mm-hmm. So she was aware, quite aware all along, that she was a potential candidate to inherit that disease.
You guys were having these conversations way before her diagnosis then?
Yes. It's partly a blessing because the family had seen that through the rest of the family, so it didn't come necessarily as a surprise. Mm-hmm. But the diagnosis really confirmed what we knew. And I can't understate the importance of getting a diagnosis.
An early one at that.
Earlier is better. Mm-hmm. And the diagnosis is very important because it kicks in a whole bunch of other support services that you couldn't get otherwise. Mm-hmm. The other part is the diagnosis helps the doctor do testing to make sure that it is dementia and not related to some other medical condition which could be causing similar effects. So the health professionals did their job to do further testing to cancel out other things, CAT scan, testing, ultrasounds, MRIs, and various testing to make sure it was related to dementia and not some other curable disease or condition.
Yeah, and I want to mention what Bill's talking about is you can receive a symptom of dementia from UTIs, or changes in your medication that need to be fixed, having your eyesight or your hearing checked, because that can throw off your balance, coordination, all those things that could contribute to Alzheimer's disease or dementia. So that's what Bill's talking about. He received a definite diagnosis.
Yes, there are other symptoms which make people think there's dementia, mm-hmm. or there's just certain things related to aging.
Yeah.
And I still go downstairs and forget why I went downstairs, but I know it's not dementia.
Yeah.
That's just, I was thinking it was something else.
And you have a lot going on throughout your days. You're constantly worrying about yourself, but also, Sharon's well-being. So that is normal. And I wanted to reiterate that Alzheimer's disease and dementia is not a normal part of aging. That's completely different. And you mentioned that you were saying, back then when her mom and her grandma had it, people were just saying that they were senile, they were getting older. It's all part about, the aging process, but it's not true at all.
That's correct.
Right. How did the diagnosis change your day-to-day living?
So I have an interesting, first I'd like to say that the people that I've met with dementia, it's like bad things happen to good people. They're not bad people.
No.
They tend to be the best of the people. And it's unfortunate that the disease affects these really good people. So So bad things happen to good people.
Mm-hmm.
The second is that it is a family disease. It affects the family, the friends, everybody. It's not just the person with it, but everybody, right down to the community, because mm-hmm. the community lives with that person. And the third is that I know there's other people out there with other diseases, whether it's cancer, a whole host of the people and caregivers. So mm-hmm. I'm not the only one out there. There's a whole bunch of us, and we all have similar problems. But having said that, how it changed our lives, the metaphor that I would use is up until the point in time of dementia, if you looked at your life like a jigsaw puzzle, and you've got a box, and it's got a picture with all the pieces put together, and you have a border, and the pieces fit together, and you have a clear picture. With the diagnosis of dementia, it's like somebody has taken that puzzle apart. They've blurred or wiped off the front of the box so you can't see the picture anymore. They've taken pieces of the puzzle away. They've ripped up corners off the puzzle, damaged them, put them all back in the box, shaken it up, opened it up, and said to the person with dementia, the care provider, family and friends, now put this back together the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden you come to the realization, you can't put it back together. It will never go back to the way it was. This is what it is. That's the reality of the situation. So I use that metaphor to explain to people what it's like to be diagnosed with dementia.
Mm-hmm.
Your puzzle, your jigsaw puzzle has been torn up, ripped apart, blurred, shaken up, and it will never be put back together.
So after you saying that, how do you move forward? How do you, Bill, meeting your wife at such a young age and building this life with her, how do you move forward?
Well, the first thing is by informing, I feel more comfortable with predictive testing, with understanding the situation, with informing myself, and knowledge is helpful for me. Knowledge provides some level of control, some level of understanding. The knowledge also allows me to form some opinions based on some sound advice rather than the scuttlebutt that people might say who know nothing about it.
Mm-hmm.
So the Alzheimer's Society, the practitioners that we've met, the medical people, they all help me inform myself, and I in turn inform our children, and I know they do some work on their own. So I would say the best way to handle it for us has been by knowledge and informing ourselves and being able to make some opinions and then understanding where we are right now and what will be coming down the pipeline. There's a couple other things that have been helpful. The Alzheimer's Society diagnosis allowed us to tap into Alzheimer, and having a one-point contact through Sandra
mm-hmm.
has been very helpful, because we don't deal with an entire organization, we deal with one person.
Yep.
So that's been very helpful. But also the entire team, the neurologist, the Family Health Center, we deal with services in Leamington.
Mm-hmm.
I call them from time to time and get assistance. There's follow-up calls. So that has worked out very well. Two things which provide maybe some other ways of dealing with it is we know we're not in it alone, and we know there's other people around to help. Two things that offer solace sometimes, and I say this and you may be well aware, but the Serenity Prayer is a very succinct writing,
mm-hmm.
you know, that says, give me the ability to decide to know what I can change, what I can't change, and the wisdom to know the difference. And then Desiderata as the poem is also a very good poem. So people find strength in other people's readings and writings.
Do you know the whole poem?
I have it here.
Let's read it out to everyone.
Well, there's two.
This is the engineer, Bill. He is super organized.
Yes.
For those of you that are listening through Spotify or Amazon Music, he has a binder that is literally color-coded with sticky notes, and there's highlighting, there's neat writing, the most neat writing I've ever seen. But this is the engineer. This is who Bill Bennett is. Very well organized. I love it.
And this is what helps me
yeah.
manage it. And I do meet people who are in a similar situation, and I recommend that they, if it works for them, to educate themselves and get knowledge. I say this as a secular thing, so I don't say this as a religious part, but yeah. It says, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So there's certain things in dementia that we cannot change, mm-hmm. and there's certain things we can manage and deal with.
I love that. How did the conversations between you and your family, your children, go when you guys received Sharon's diagnosis and up until this point now? Like, is it open communication? Do you still have trouble maybe telling your kids certain things?
We have no dirty little family secrets. Mm-hmm. It's all on the table. The kids were all invited to the memory clinic session. Sarah came because our sons are busy with their own families and careers. Sarah communicates with them the results. Sarah has came the other day when we met with the dietitian. She comes with us to the neurologist.
Is she the youngest or oldest?
She's the middle.
Middle, okay.
And so she passes on the information to our kids, as do I. I send them articles. I send them pictures of what we're doing. So there's nothing that's been held back, and the kids are exposed to everything. And when we talk about this, as recent as this morning, to drop Sharon off mm-hmm. at Sarah's place, you know, we talk about it with Sharon there. Sharon, she doesn't understand as much as she used to about her condition and the affliction, but we don't hide it. Mm-hmm. And it's got to the point where we do tell friends and family and people that need to know of the situation.
I really, really appreciate you for mentioning that.
Yeah, no secrets. Yeah. It just doesn't help. And a lot of people that I speak to, that I talk to, that who have dementia, it is tearing the family apart. And I can say our own personal experience with Sharon's sisters and brothers, in some of the situations, it has torn the families apart mm-hmm. irreparably, irrevocably. It has just caused so much trouble within the families. And a lot of it is just misinformation that they don't understand the situation that the care providers are having, that the person with dementia is having, mm-hmm. that the entire system has with the issues that go on.
And it's not just miscommunication. Sometimes it's no communication at all, right? Because they think they're trying to protect whoever the person is, but
that's why the Desiderata part is so important.
Yes.
Don't listen to vexatious people too much, loud in voice, because everybody's got an opinion. So when you have formed your own opinion based on some reasonably good advice, mm-hmm. You know when people are telling you something that is important or if they're saying something which has no basis.
I really like who you are as a person, Bill, because you do a lot of researching and you are open to conversations just so that you can form your own opinion. You know, because some people are closed-minded and, you know, they think what they think like right away and that's it, the end of it. I like that you do your own research, a lot of it, and you have a lot of conversations with different people in the community.
Well, the genetic testing is a perfect example where mm-hmm. They were very cautious about talking to us and before we went ahead with the testing. Mm-hmm. And the genetic testing is a controversial topic. Sharon and I both discussed it, and we agreed that there would be no benefit to her, to us as a family, or to the dementia Alzheimer's community at large if we kept it hidden.
Yeah.
So we agreed that we would talk about it publicly, make people aware of our situation. We don't have the answers. We have got a lot of questions, but maybe we'll provide some solutions and it'll start to form a better understanding of the situation. Mm-hmm. So the genetic testing would be a perfect example of that.
After you did the testing at the memory clinic, is that when you became involved with the Alzheimer's Society, or you were already involved with us before that?
I spoke to the Alzheimer's Society, and the Alzheimer's Society is very clear, get the diagnosis first. Mm-hmm. And that's the proper way to go, because some people may not have that. So get the diagnosis, and once you get the diagnosis, if you're in the affirmative, you're in. If you're not in the affirmative, go get other assistance for other afflictions.
And the diagnosis received from the memory clinic, right?
Yes.
Did you have to go on a wait list, or did you have to get a referral from your family doctor?
Our family doctor did it, and we got it very quickly. And the memory clinic does a wonderful job because within 3 hours you get a response.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't wait for months to get in, months to get a response, and then you get it in a piece of paper without an explanation. The team led by Dr. Horn give you the information right then and there 3 hours later.
Mm-hmm. So it's not even that long of a process.
3 hours.
3 hours, and you get your results right there.
You get your results right there.
What programs and services have you participated in so far at the Alzheimer's Society?
Well, we've attended the Minds in Motion mm-hmm. twice. Very helpful. Yeah. We go to Memory Cafe twice a month.
Mm-hmm.
We've gone there. We've also done the care providers preparing for the holidays. Rosemary put that on.
Yes, yeah.
That was very helpful. The First Link series, I've done the care and the teach. We have the casual conversations that I have with you and with Barb and with other people at Alzheimer's Society.
Mm-hmm.
The follow-up by Alzheimer's Society is very helpful. I have discussions with the healthcare professionals because we talk about it openly without it being a overly emotional, irresponsible, irrational discussion.
Yeah.
So we have discussion. So all those things have added up, and we'll continue to work with the Alzheimer's Society and attend functions as we can.
Are you currently participating in the caregiver support groups that we have, or not?
No. Part of it is because I've accelerated our life
mm-hmm.
through travel, which is, we've done a lot of travel, and we've been gone almost every summer
yeah.
for 4 or 5 months, so really we've only been around in the fall and winter.
Okay, and in the fall and winter you're with me or Barb anyway.
That's
so,
correct.
So that's great.
So it's only when the programs are available and we're home.
Yeah. What are, that's what the next thing I want to touch base on is that you didn't allow this diagnosis to stop the things that you like doing, which is traveling. What different things have you had to do so that you're able to travel comfortably with Sharon?
Well, it continually changes. And some of the things that I've done, first, I have Sharon has we got her a tracker watch,
mm-hmm.
and it has a GPS on it. So every 10 minutes, it sends a signal, and we can track that. Not that we've needed to use it. She doesn't wander. But it's reassuring to me
mm-hmm.
to know that if I miss her for a while or I go away, and for example, her friend's taking her out for lunch today, if for some reason she makes the wrong turn, we feel much more comfortable that every 10 minutes we can find out exactly where she is.
Right.
The watch also has a phone plan,
mm-hmm.
so we can call her, and she doesn't have to answer. It automatically answers. It just rings, and she can speak right away, and so can we,
mm-hmm.
so we can find out where she is. That's very reassuring. Not that we've had to use it, but we have that as insurance policy, and it lets me feel a lot better about her being with other people or me turning my back for a little while.
Yeah.
If she goes to the washroom somewhere and comes out and I don't quite see, and she turns the wrong way. I've also used the Tile. I just had an alarm system put in the house so that I can set it at night. If the doors open up, an alarm will go off. I'm not concerned about it as much as I am in the wintertime if for some reason Sharon went out
during the winter
yeah, in cold time, that would be a really significant
mm-hmm.
cause for a lot of grief. So it's a winter time. I'm really planning on that one.
So you're taking a lot of precautions.
Yes.
Just in the case of Sharon going missing. You mentioned that the watch has a cellular plan.
Yes.
And if as soon as you call, she doesn't have to answer. She doesn't have to press a button or anything. You can automatically talk to her through the watch.
That's correct.
I think that is so dementia friendly.
Yes.
Because it just takes away the option of not answering or picking up if you know.
It answers itself automatically.
If she hears your voice.
Yes.
She feels safe.
Yes.
And secure that it's your voice. You know what I mean? So can you let everybody know the site again that you...
The name of it?
Yeah.
So Alzheimer's has a site which lists several different tracking devices.
Mm-hmm.
I went through that list and I looked at them. A lot of tracking devices are meant more for physical fitness, to track step, speed, calories, heart rate, other things. But the Alzheimer's Society has a site, and this is on there amongst many of them. And this one in particular is called Little Tracker, LIL Tracker. Of the ones I looked at, I decided on that one for a few reasons. It was available from Canada.
Mm-hmm.
The phone plan was very affordable because some of them have monthly or annual plans, which can become pretty pricey. This is the least amount of data, least amount of phone plan, very affordable. And the phone was and the watch is very affordable. I did that one because I wanted to try it out. I didn't want to make a great big capital expense and then find out I didn't like it or it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing is I know technology changes, so
every year.
Next year it'll be something that'll be far more powerful, far better, and half the price.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a really easy way to get into a tracking device and a phone plan, and very affordable.
Mm-hmm. You can find a list of all of these devices that Bill is talking about on findingyourway.ca. And I will have that linked underneath this podcast when it's posted so that you're able to look for yourself and do your own research like Bill has to make a decision for yourself. Bill, what are some things that you've learned about yourself since being on this care partner journey?
Yes. So with the diagnosis, I had to make up some files at home. And the file name that I chose was To Make the Most of It. So you'll see, and I brought a binder, and it has it right on there. It's TMTMOI,
mm-hmm.
and it stands for To Make the Most of It. So really what I think is important for people is you need to make the most of the situation that you have. This is the cards you've been dealt. You don't get to give any cards back. It's five stud poker, which I don't gamble, but there's no giving cards back and getting a new one.
Yep.
This is your hand. You might as well make the most of it while you can. The mistake, I've lived vicariously through other people. If you see other people that are successful, find out what they did and do what they did.
Mm-hmm.
If you see people that have failed or have a terrible time, find out what they did and don't do it. So my suggestion would be live vicariously through the experiences of other people. And because it was prevalent in our family, on Sharon's side, I got to see what some folks did really well and what some folks could have done better on,
mm-hmm.
and the impact it had in the family. Never was I prepared for the care partner responsibility, and so it's an ongoing process, and there's nothing constant about it. And we know what the end result looks like, and we know how it's going to end, but we don't know what's going to happen in between. So we just mm-hmm. prepare for that the best we can. The dementia is painful for everybody, and I'll go through, I have a list of what I think are the most important people involved, but it's painful for everybody. It's not just the person with dementia nor the care provider. I think I've also learned you don't have to do this on your own, that there's a lot of people out there. Even when I inform strangers, if we're on our boat and I need help docking, and I know the guy's going to say, hey, lady, throw me that rope, give me this, pull this in, I explain to the guy, my wife's not going to necessarily be able to help you. And this is a reason why. It's amazing how much understanding there is of it. And that's Alzheimer's Society getting the information out to the public in general, or they've been touched by it by a friend or family mm-hmm. or someone that they know. So there's a great understanding, and I've never ran into any resistance yet or any problems. A few in the United States, but once I explained it, they completely accepted it and cooperated well with us. I mentioned that the information, education, and knowledge are the best options that I found to help myself. Mm-hmm. Some people don't want to know. That's their business. I find by knowing, it helps me. I know I'll never be in control, and that's the serenity prayer. So you figure out what can I control, what can't I control, and give me the wisdom to know the difference.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very important point. I've learned this really, really easy to be critical, deliberately critical, and I'll even use a strong word, cruel, because of what you're up against and you don't believe the situation that's occurring, it's easy to be critical and cruel,
mm-hmm.
deliberately. It's even far easier to be unconsciously, mistakenly, inadvertently critical and cruel. Some of the things that you do can be very untoward the person with dementia, because you just still, and I don't think I'll ever fully accept dementia and what's happening with it, but it's just easy to be critical and cruel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have a hard time dealing with all the changes that happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think I'll ever accept the situation fully, and nor do I think our family or anybody else fully accept it. There will always be a little bit of denial, a little bit of wishing, a little bit of, well, we can fix it, but mm-hmm. Probably won't happen.
I feel like our listeners are going to get a lot out of this podcast from you, because you're just so honest and so genuine with this journey. What is one advice of everything you said that you would give to a new care partner that is on this new journey?
So I've made up a list of things that I've done well.
Okay.
That I've done well, and I can certainly go through that, or I can, you know, we leave that for another day. But
let's go through your list.
One of the things that I think is most important is the list of the priority of people. And I know people will take exception to this, but I think as far as the most important people involved are family and friends.
Mm-hmm.
The second is the support services. The third is the care provider.
Mm-hmm.
And the fourth would be the person with dementia. It sounds strange not to have the person with dementia at the number one.
Mm-hmm.
But without the support of family and friends, most of the other things cannot unfold. So you have to have the support of family and friends first,
mm-hmm.
and they'll take you a long ways towards success and to keep you on the path. And then without the support services, you don't have a good understanding. So whether that's Alzheimer's Society or the neurologist or the family health team or your general practitioner, you need those support services, because they can give you the truth and all these things out there, you know, drink this and take this and do Sudoku is going to cure you. No.
Mm-hmm.
So support services you need to have. And then the care provider, if the care provider isn't there, the person with dementia will not get any care.
Yeah.
It'll be left up to people who don't care as much. And then the fourth person is the person with dementia. After that, general friends and acquaintances, and then the community.
Yeah.
So I have a list of six people that I believe in order of priority,
mm-hmm.
With family and friends being first.
Oh, this is very interesting. You're the first person who's ever responded, or first care partner who's ever responded to this question like this. And at first, when you said, you know, you're going down your list, and then you had the person living with dementia fourth, I'm like, I want to see what he says. But it all makes total sense.
Yeah.
You can't help the person if you don't know what you don't know. You're not. A lot of people don't even still know what Alzheimer's disease and dementia is, right?
Correct.
So you have to educate yourself. And then you have to educate your family and friends that are the closest to the person living with dementia. And you can't take care of Sharon if you're not well taken care of.
That's correct.
So all of this makes total sense. Like, you're the first person who ever responded to this question like this. And I appreciate it so much, Bill.
Well, some of the family and friends, inadvertently, back to my comment, can be cruel,
mm-hmm.
and critical, some deliberate,
yeah.
some completely thinking that they're helping,
mm-hmm.
but they could be really harmful by being critical and cruel without even knowing it,
yeah.
because they're not aware of the situation that the care provider is going through or the person with dementia is going through. So without them, it makes it really hard, and they can make it really, really difficult
for
the care provider and the person with dementia, family and friends.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That was an amazing response. And it honestly goes back to the next question I was going to ask you, which is the name of our podcast is Better Together, and what does that mean to you from your perspective? And I feel like you literally just laid it out there in those...
Well, I had a couple of things, and it was do not withdraw, isolate, or surrender.
Mm-hmm.
Be bold, go forward until it's obvious you cannot safely do it anymore.
Yeah.
And I think I got this maybe from you and Rosemary and a few others, but the social interaction, and Dr. Horn said the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing can make up for the benefits of social interaction. It's not long-lasting, at least I can't see long-lasting effects. And I think it was even you that said it. Sometimes in social situations, you can't even tell which person has dementia,
mm-hmm.
and which person doesn't, because their social skills kick in.
Are still there.
In a safe, comfortable, understanding environment,
mm-hmm.
with the person with dementia, they're a completely different personality and all sorts of good things happened to them, probably at every level, emotionally, chemically, electrically, everything in their body changes in a very nice social atmosphere.
And I'm getting emotional because I can see Sharon. Her laugh is so infectious. When she's around, you know, other care partners and clients and all of us, actually, she is just so happy and always smiling. Even if you're not next to her and someone else is, and she can have a full conversation, and even if it, you know, doesn't have anything to do with what's going on or whatever the case is, she's still able to have that human interaction, and she's always laughing. And her laugh is so infectious, so it gets everybody else laughing and smiling.
Yeah.
I can't thank you enough for, you know, continuing to bring her to these programs. Because her energy is very, very contagious.
Yeah, I participated in the Alzheimer's sponsorship with that company from Toronto, Ifria or something. I don't remember the name of them. Oh. And I said to them, if you could measure what the social interaction does on a person with dementia, and I don't know how you measure it, but, you know, chemically, emotionally, electrically charged or something, and then you find a way of putting that into a drug.
Yeah.
That would be a very helpful. It wouldn't be a cure, but it would be long lasting after the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So, because something happens to people with dementia in a safe, comfortable environment with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I wrote an article. I was asked to write an article.
Yes.
And I did it about Philip, who unfortunately passed away.
Yeah.
From the symptoms of dementia. But he would come to the Memory Cafe. And he'd say to his wife, Wavy, I want to go there because they're just like me. And that was the article I wrote called Just Like Me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he felt comfortable, because all the people in that meeting were just like me, and we were just like him.
Mm-hmm. And that's just another example of why we need each other, why people need people, because of that example with Phil, wanting to come to things like this because he feels safe. To talk, to express himself, to feel good about himself, right?
Yes.
So this is amazing. Thank you so much, Bill, for taking the time out of your already busy schedule to do this podcast with me. I would love for us to finish this podcast with some rapid-fire questions. These 5 questions are all random, and it will allow our audience to get to know a little more about you. Can you answer these questions with one word or one sentence, and there are no wrong answers? Are you ready?
Go.
All right. If you didn't have to sleep, what would you do with that extra time?
Be with my dog.
And what's your dog's name?
Katie.
Katie. If you could only eat one food for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Fruit.
What kind of fruit?
I'm tossed between cherries and peaches.
Oh, okay. And both are in season, right?
Yes. And we live in Kingsville, which is...
You have the best.
We have the best.
The best of the best. What would your perfect Sunday look like?
Boating and playing with my dog.
Does Katie go on the boat with you guys?
She's probably gone thousands of miles with us on the boat.
More than everybody.
And in our RV, been with us for over 100,000 kilometers.
Wow, she's such a good dog.
She is.
What could you give a 40-minute presentation on with absolutely no preparation?
Didn't see that one coming.
It's a good question.
It's a good question. Well... Hot off this, I could talk about what we just did, but I think other than that, I could talk about professional engineering and the state of it.
What's the best piece of advice someone has ever given you?
Probably my mom, and it was from being children, and that was this saying that everybody knows, and unfortunately it's not happening out there very much, but it was, sticks and stones can break your bones, but names will never hurt me.
Yep. Okay, I love that. Thank you so much, Bill. It was a pleasure speaking with you today. I hope our listeners have gained a better understanding about what it entails to be a care partner. Hey, listeners, my call to action for all of you. How can you help? Educate yourself and encourage others to do the same. Refer your circle of friends and family to our services. Support our events and fundraising campaigns. And let's keep talking about dementia. Listen to new episodes on the last Friday of every month on our YouTube channel, Alzheimer Windsor. Don't forget to subscribe. Our podcasts are also available on Spotify and Amazon Music. Helpful for today, hope for tomorrow, and remember, we are better together. Thank you so much, Bill.
Thank you.